Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at Bain & Co.'s recent M&A report. In it, it shows market opportunity for bold moves for this year, despite a possibility of an uncertain 2023 market looming. Joining us in Kuala Lumpur is the Managing Director for Bain Kuala Lumpur, Shazrul Asari. Shazrul, let's talk a little bit more about the headline findings of the global M&A report of Bain & Co. 2023.
Sure, Ibrahim. So maybe I'll start with looking back in 2022, the year that just passed. It's basically a tale of two halves. The first half of 2022, we saw continued momentum from a blockbuster and record 2021. But around about June 2022, with the US Fed rising their interest rates and the uncertain microeconomic conditions, it put a little bit of a chill and pulled the brakes on the M&A market. So what we saw there was mega deals, deals that are more than 10 billion in size. They went on a pause in the second half of the year, and smaller deals slowed down. And so this resulted in the global M&A deal value falling 36% year on year in 2022. And we ended the year about US 3.8 trillion, similar to roughly around the pre-COVID levels. So that's on the overall landscape. From a valuations perspective, we saw also valuations tempering to about 20, the 10-year lows, from about 15.4 EV EBITDA multiples to 11.9 EV EBITDA multiples. And the largest drop we see in tech, that went from about 29 multiples to 23 multiples. Healthcare and life sciences, which were very hot in 2021, it dropped from about 20 to 15 multiples. So what we are seeing, I mean, it sounds doom and gloom, but it's not really, because what we are seeing here is that the deal values are going back to pre-pandemic levels after a record-breaking 2021.
In the chart, in the report, there's a chart that shows quite an interesting drop or a steady decline in terms of strategic deal by volume according to region. Despite this, of course, Asia Pacific is still at about 20%. Or 29%, pardon me. And do you feel that these kind of deals in Asia Pacific is continue to dwindle for this year compared to previous years?
So we will see continued resilience in the smaller size deals. When we surveyed M&A practitioners, about 80% of the practitioners view M&A as still central to their business strategy as they look into growth, they look into both scale and also scope, right? Adding scope to their business. And 80% of the practitioners, the same lot that we surveyed, foresee same or more deals in 2023, with more assets becoming available, more attractive valuation, and also decreased competition. So yeah, so we see this globally, and likely will be the same trend also for the region.
Let's talk about the sectors per se. You were mentioning just now technology as being a sector that needs to be looked at. But of course, other sectors that can be discussed might be of interest for some of us that are watching our conversation right now. What would be some of the what would be some of the sectors that you think, other than technology, that's going to be quite interesting to look at for the M&A activities for this year?
One sector that is undergoing huge transition right now is the energy sector, right? We all know, going from the traditional fossil fuels across to the renewables sector, there is a lot of talks around hydrogen, and the mobility space. What we will see, not just in energy and natural resource, but every sector out there will have a few cash-rich companies. And if I take, for example, in the energy sector, there is around about $300 billion cash held by the 10 largest energy and natural resources company. So this is nearly two times that in 2019. And so this cash, right, and this strength in the balance sheet will hopefully see a lot more deal volumes and deal value in the energy sector. And beyond that, I mean, if we look at the broader story, right? There's a few trends that we will see will happen going forward. About three or four that I think is worth highlighting here. So cash-rich companies with strong balance sheet, they will continue to make their strategic and their bold moves. Energy, industrials, and tech, I've mentioned that already. These are standout sectors. Top players still have solid balance sheet and great cash reserves, right? Number two, as I mentioned earlier, the deal volumes, we expect to remain robust. In 2022, while we saw the value drop by 36% and the disappearance of the bigger deals, the volume, from a volume perspective, we only saw a 12% drop. So this suggests resilience in deal activity. And in terms of the type of deals, we will see a balance of between scale and scope deal, right? Scale deals being deals acquisition or M&A of companies that are similar to your core business, and scope is beyond the core business. So on the scale side of things, high interest rates, weak economy, it tends to favor more the scale deals, right? Deals with line of sight on synergies, assets with cash flow, and also building just ability to build scale. However, on the other side, the companies in sectors like energy and natural resource, this is a time when they are looking at building their engine too, right? Building new capabilities, buying new presence in other geographies. So we are quite excited about the deal space this year. Smaller, but we feel that it will continue to be resilient.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about some of the cash-rich companies making these strategic moves. Do you feel that these cash-rich companies also include companies in the technology sector, the way you mentioned, hydrogen and hydrogen-oriented companies and similar companies within that sector?
So the cash-rich, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, most sectors will have some cash-rich players, right? In the energy and natural resource space, we will see more deal activities. What I think is more important is for all sectors, players from all sectors, to look at what they need to do going into a market that is a lot more uncertain. Three things. Number one, they will need to sharpen their pencils, right? What I mean by this is that look back at their M&A process and the way they conclude deals, accelerating decision-making, ensuring that there is faster response time in this much tighter deal environment. So what they'll need to do is revise their scenarios, look at their availability of capital, scrutinize their competitors, right? Who might make moves in the deal space. And, you know, identify why M&A can help to scale innovation and build engine two of their business. So that's the first one. The second one is, with the volatility and the uncertainty, the companies will need to do a lot of homework, right? They need to gain conviction on their potential deals. And the deal lead times tend to grow when it comes to an uncertain environment. There's more volatility, there's more questions. When we do projections to evaluate the company, you've got to bake in a lot more scenarios. So doing this kind of in advance, being proactive about it, is something that they should do. And the third and the last one is integration. This is a classic one. When you look at M&A, the value is captured during the integration phase. And when we surveyed the M&A practitioners, 80% of them say that of the many things, culture is really high up on the agenda. So if you merge two companies, tends to be a lot of issues with how the two companies look at decision-making styles, for example, the way that they engage senior leaders, the way that they engage the teams. And above And on top of it all, the purpose of the two companies, right, it might end up clashing. So 75% of those people that we survey say that they still struggle with culture integration, with post-merger integration activities.
All right, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a bit more with Bain and Co. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Shazrul Asari, the managing partner for Bain & Co. Kuala Lumpur. We're looking at the Bain & Co.'s Global 2023 M&A report. We're looking at some of the findings within the report. One of them is talking about the continued prevalence of small to mid-sized deals. Maybe, Shazrul, you can talk to that effect in terms of the size of deals being more towards small to mid-size as opposed to the kind of mega deals that were used to pre-pandemic levels.
Yeah, I'm sure, Ryan. So in an environment that is a little bit more volatile with uncertain future, the companies and M&A practitioners, they tend to shy away from the kind of big blockbuster deals, right? It's just a lot of risk and a lot of effort, a lot of mindshare that needs to go into these huge big blockbuster deals. Having said that, if we look back in history, right, in the times of volatility, if you look at, say, in 2008, 2009, in the previous downturn, we saw that companies that continue to be resilient in M&A activity, they tend to come out as winners. Right? From a total shareholder return perspective, companies that, if you look at 2007 to 2017, companies that have been doing M&A and they continue to do M&A, we see their TSR, the total shareholder return, being at around about 5.9% in that 10-year period. Those that were not active, they were kind of much lower, about 4 point something percent, right, from a total shareholder return perspective. So we see those companies who are set up for M&A, they will continue to look for the great deals, they will continue to add those, continue with those deals to pull into their existing businesses. So we will continue to see this deal, the deal space becoming quite active in 2023, but more towards the medium and small scale deals.
I want to explore your firm's outlook in terms of M&As. One idea here is, of course, companies trying to retool their portfolios through divestitures and separations, perhaps looking at companies that are doing a few things or different activities and perhaps spinning them off into monoline businesses. Is this a reality that we need to look at for this year moving forward?
So we see quite a number of this happening, right? And when we say retool, what we mean there is that companies are reshaping their portfolio either through divestitures and through separations. The first point that I want to make is that through down cycles, and there's when we see a lot of uncertainty, companies they tend to be forced to look at and reevaluate their portfolio under new scenarios. Right now we're seeing these high interest rate scenarios going at least the next couple of years, and it takes quite a fair bit of conviction for companies to divest in a downturn, right? Executives, they tend to drag their feet a little bit on selling underperforming assets at a loss, right? In inverted commas. But we need to think about it this way, right? There's no amount of multiple expansion that can offset a declining business. especially those businesses that are suffering from underinvestment, suffering from lack of attention from the executives. So we expect most of this divestment to happen in sectors that are undergoing transition as they look to kind of reshape their portfolio, for example, in energy, moving out their less kind of clean assets and investing in the newer energy sources. So that's number one. Number two, when we talk about scope deals, right? Companies that are buying other companies that are not within their core business. So give an example, an oil and gas company buying into renewables, right? The way that oil and gas companies or utilities, the way that they are set up is very, very different, right? They've worked 10, 15, 20 years. Their governance model, the way they evaluate deals, is very much tuned towards the oil and gas sector, right? It means that, you know, health and safety, high double-digit returns, and so on. So as they look into entering areas that are, you know, more nascent, renewables, right, solar, or even, you know, more recent things like hydrogen, where the market is still developing, prices are still being developed, electric mobility. If a company applies the same governance model, the same evaluation model that you tend to apply for a mature sector like oil and gas into these new upcoming sectors, it will shackle the companies a little bit, right? So we see many of this happening now. Lionel Bassett, the hived off a company. Closer to home, we saw Petronas, right, launching Gentari, which is a clean energy focused company. And we absolutely feel that this is the right way forward as companies go into scope deals that are further from their core.
Okay. Speaking about Gentari for Petronas, there has been conversations in terms of listing Petronas right now, and there is a big debate in terms of whether or not Petronas needs to continue to list its subsidiaries, monoline kind of businesses. We've seen how they've done it for Petronas Chemicals, Petronas Dagangan. Do you feel that kind of value creation by monoline businesses like conglomerates like Petronas is going to be seen quite widely? I'm not just talking about Petronas, of course. I'm talking about, you know, other conglomerates like, I don't know, GE, for instance, or something like that. Do you feel that is a possibility?
I can't comment on Petronas specifically. Any ideas obviously deserve good closer study, understanding the pros and cons and the merits of it. I think maybe first I'll take the question from like a Malaysian lens first, right? I think if we pull up into the broader economy, I guess a big question should be about how do we make Malaysian companies more attractive for investment, either it is Petronas or any other Malaysian companies out there, and in order for a company to be seen as attractive, the ecosystem and the way that they are set up needs to be done in the right way, right? So you mentioned monoline businesses. When we look at like monoline businesses, like, you know, companies like Lionel Bassett, when they set up their engine two, right? A separate engine two with a separate governance, et cetera. It is basically also signaling a bit to the investors that, you know, they are serious about this new capability area, this new product line. They're investing quite a sizable amount into this new area, setting up a new governance model that can make decisions at pace and reduce the drag, right, from the core mothership. So yeah, we do see that more of this happening in the future. But going back to the Malaysian kind of story, the questions will be, you know, do we asking ourselves, do we have the right ecosystems in Malaysia to encourage innovation, right? We see deal value in Malaysia actually going down. We are at, kind of at the bottom of 10 years, if you look at the historical 10 years. Number one. Number two, do we have the right kind of talent base to support companies that is undergoing kind of transition, right? Moving, for example, from fossil fuel to renewables. And do we, and most importantly, also enabling policies, right? And incentives that are attractive. So setting up monoline business is not kind of the end in itself, right? It is one part of a much broader picture.
All right. One more break before we conclude our conversation with Bain & Co. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Shazrul Asari, the managing partner of Bain & Co. Kuala Lumpur, on the line with us. Let's take a look into this whole notion of being pressed for better valuations. We understand that not just in M&A, but perhaps in the investing scene altogether, from private equity to venture capital, to just banks trying to disburse loans to corporates, we're looking at them, understanding better the businesses that are doing these kind of activities, trying to press better on valuations, and try to get the best out of their buck moving forward. Gone are the days where cash and investment is free flow, and we're seeing crazy high valuations with no to little basis of why these valuations are reached to that levels. Do you feel that sense has now prevailed when it comes to trying to find better valuations for the companies that is trying to merge, acquire, or being invested into?
Yeah. I mean, at the point that the deal is valued, there will be, you know, reasons that why deals are valued at a certain level, right? Sometimes sentiments also come into play. But yeah, we do see valuations now at, you know, around about 12x EV/EBITDA. I mean, if you look at the longer run valuation, we see, you know, historically we see a floor at about 9 to 10. So there is still a little bit to go, right? From 12 to 9 and 10 turns. Yeah, what is, I guess, critical right now is, as I mentioned earlier, for the M&A practitioners to sharpen their pencils, right? In terms of the way they do due diligence, it's got to be a lot more deeper, a lot more scenarios that needs to be built into the due diligence. And in order to do this, it does take a longer time. So, you know, preparing early, anticipating potential deals early is something that we really need to focus on this year as we go through the uncertainty. So yeah, but valuations have tempered a little bit from the, you know, from 2021. However, I think that there is still a little bit more to go.
Right. Final word before we conclude our conversation.
I guess I can only kind of repeat a few of those things I mentioned earlier, right? So this is the moment for companies with strong balance sheet, good cash reserve, to start looking around, to start shopping around. And as our data has shown, right, those companies that continue their deal momentum in a downturn, they tend to outperform. They tend to outperform the companies who kind of go silent during downturn. So don't let the uncertainty scare you away from the deal market. But the due diligence must be done really well. You got to find ways to be convinced in the potential deals. And don't forget the post-merger integration, right? And working through that even during the due diligence stage is very important. So that will be a few of my thoughts, right, for the M&A space.
Thank you very much. That was Shazrul Asari, the managing partner of Bain & Co. Kuala Lumpur, joining us to talk about the Global M&A Report Outlook 2023 published by Bain & Co. Continue to stay with us on Astro Awani. There are plenty of conversations that is in store like this that can be found there. Also, you can find out more on astro.com or search for Notepad or Niaga Awani. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.